Hello everyone, my name's Pete Lyons and joining me on this podcast is my partner in crime, my co-conspirator abroad at this very moment when I speak to you in Italy, Pinerolo no less, at the EFRA 4-wheel drive and 2-wheel drive 1/10 Euros. Please say good evening or hello, good day, whatever time it is, to my co-host Alexander Hayward. Say hello, Alexander.
Hello, Pete. How's it going?
I'm very well, thanks. I hope you're good too. I've been following all your news and the rest of the British team over in Pinerolo with keen interest this last week. It's been fantastic to watch you all racing out there. Just first off, I'd like to thank my sponsors, that being Schumacher Racing, Dash RC, New Concept, God RC and Tudor Heart Racing. And if you'd like to thank your sponsors as well, please, Alexander.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Darren Boyle and the team X Factory UK and DMS Racing for the help they've given me this year. Great products with Team Coralie Electrics, J Concepts, Exotech, and all the bits and pieces they distribute.
That's good. So thank you there, guys. I obviously know Darren and the team well. Thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting us in what we do, and obviously for Abe as well. And basically, it's been an action-packed week with no small amount of controversy in certain ways and some amazing racing in others. Now, I was out there 2 years ago for the Euros at Pinerolo, and so I've got a good idea of what it was like for all of you this year. But myself and Abe couldn't go this year, but you did, obviously, Alexander. So how was your trip out there?
Well, it was probably around about 20 to 30 times harder this year than it was the year you went.
Right.
No, I'm joking. It was the same.
the track, all the same.
Track was just all the same. The track was just as hard. They changed, obviously, a few little bits. You probably saw, like, instead of going after the triple at the back section, instead of going kind of round on a couple more straights, yeah, like a little chicane, which I think worked quite well. It's quite nice when you got that quite like a good line through there.
But, yeah, I thought it was good.
But man, the track was hard. I don't think I've been watching some of it back on RCTV. I mean, Dave Church and the guys there have done an amazing job. Like all the events they go to, they always have great commentary, informative, great pit walks, chats with the drivers, and the coverage is awesome. So thanks to those guys for kind of putting it all online for us to see the events we can't make, so people back home can watch it.
Yes.
But yeah, watching some of it back, the camera doesn't do the track justice in the fact that it's massive. Like the jumps are absolutely huge. So they look small on TV, but they are in real life. They're huge. And yeah, the track was just as hard as ever. Really, to get a clean run over 5 minutes, I'd say is almost impossible. I think I had a couple of practice rounds which I stayed tidy, apart from a couple of factory rolls, like back onto my wheels. And I think I had one qualifier in 4-wheel drive. Where again, I had a factory roll on the last lap and got away with it, but that's about as clean as it gets on that track.
Yes, well, I certainly remember how difficult it was. Just let me rewind just very slightly and echo what you've said. Is that I was watching all week on the television at home, and I have to say, not really their fault. Obviously, there were some interruptions in transmission with RC Racing TV, but it really was terrific to watch, and a massive well done to the team out there and what they did and the camera work. And David Church's commentary was really good to listen to. I really enjoyed it. And actually, when the racing was on and there wasn't any commentary, you realised how much you liked listening to DC's commentary. I really missed it. Well done, DC and the team. It really was great, David. Really was.
He was commentating under the rostrum, like in the kind of the race control area, just underneath the driver's stand. And standing at the side of the track, if you stand kind of to the left or the right, you can't hear him. If you stand just in front of his window where he was looking out of, you can hear
the window
his commentary.
The window of doom, as he called
and
it, yes.
You can kind of stand there and listen to his commentary, and it actually makes what you're watching then, there live, become exciting, because he's telling you the times, who needs to get what to get in what finals. And that makes it really exciting, actually. So every kind of race I tried to watch, I tried to stand kind of in front of that window, so you can hear DC talking about the various drivers, where they're from, and what kind of pace they're running on.
Yeah, DC was superb, I felt. So well done, DC. Well done, DC. And thanks for all of your efforts to everyone out there the cameraman and all the rest of it was really, really good. So you drove down to Pinerolo, did you not?
I did indeed. Yeah, 1,000 miles.
1,000 miles, that's right. And yeah. Nothing to do with the single by those two Scottish brothers.
No.
10,000 miles.
I've
always laughed about that record. And do you know why? Because he says quite specifically, and when I'm working, I'll give almost every penny to you. Typical Scotsman. That's what's always made me laugh. I when I'm working, I'll give almost every penny to you. So he's keeping back some more to get drunk on, basically.
Yeah.
But the trip out there, 1,000 miles down to our international listeners who may not know where Pinerolo is, hashtag going loco down in the Pinerolo, which is my hashtag, by the way.
I came up with that two years ago.
Yes. It's near Turin, isn't it? It's about 50 minutes drive from Turin.
Yeah, not too far from
if I remember correctly. So that's in Italy. And it was lovely weather all week, wasn't it? Very hot.
It was indeed. So you're talking started off about 32, 33, went to about 35. And by the end of the week, yeah, so it's been hot all week. Even in the evening, it's staying kind of like 22, 23 degrees.
Yes.
So it's built up over the week. It's been really, really warm.
Good, good. Feeling hot. It's all that, is it? Feeling hot. Was he dancing around in the pits and all of that? So, yeah, it was actually warm here in the UK. Cambridge, which is my local town, hit the British record, I saw on the news this morning, of 38.7. It was.
Oof. Yeah.
And it was it was really, really hot. It was really hot. So I wasn't too envious of the weather you guys were having.
Yeah.
But can I say, Johnny, they seem to do a fantastic job of preparing the place. It looked great. It looked terrific. The presentation was
awesome.
Was great 2 years ago, wasn't it?
You can tell they've put in even more work since. Everything was just immaculate. We talk about Reims being a great venue in terms of the fact it's indoors, it's clear, you've got a nice pit area. But I think this venue is probably one of the best, I think, certainly one of the best I've been to. It looked fantastic, the track. And they worked tirelessly. They had a track crew there, obviously, for about probably 10 people for the crew for the entire week. And they just worked flat out the entire time. They had a problem with the track. They came and solved it. I know we'll probably talk about this a bit later on, but the problem with the AstroTurf at the back. But to give them their due, they were on it. Like they were there fixing it up as much as they could, and they didn't stop. They were there from kind of 7 in the morning probably till way after we left at kind of probably 8:30, 9 in the evening every single day, for 5 days.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've done a great job.
Did they still have the bleachers there to sit on the right hand side?
No, I think because it's a lower turnout this year.
I couldn't see that.
They didn't do it because of the lower turnout. So to watch the finals, if everyone was watching the A finals, you could watch it from, everyone could get in front of the track, in front of the rostrum. So you could, like the whole line all the way down, everyone could get space in front of the track. So I don't think they felt the need to have the bleachers there this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember obviously the bar was near there, not because I spent lots of time at it, but I remember it was quite nice of an evening. And was the camping all still there? The camping of area? Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably more people camping this year than there were last time we went. Quite a few caravans, obviously the halls were camping, and quite a few people drove down and had caravans there from all over Europe. They had the bar area serving ice cold beer on tap. They had like fresh food they were cooking. They're doing barbecue food. So the whole setup was awesome, really. We had obviously power in the pits, plenty of space. Again, probably because it's a lower turnout, but we had probably like 2 places per driver, if you like. So there was plenty of room to pit.
Shout out to the halls, bless them. Tommy and Jamie were watching them all week, and Graham and Julie having to bear that mantle of responsibility of the British team manager.
Julie
upon
did
her
fantastic
after
job on,
after mowing the big bear. Didn't go. So
she did a great job all week. She's there to help look after the boys, and she was gluing ties for them all week with Graham, and cooking some food for them for lunch and dinner, and doing the washing. She was doing everything for them, as well as doing
slaving away, gluing tires, Julie, slaving away. I bet they locked her in the tire compound. No, so that was great seeing their results, and it looked like the organisation was spot on, as obviously with the track repair and Johnny, they looked like they did a terrific job, I thought.
Yeah, timetabling was bang on. Everything ran to schedule. There were a couple of delays for track repair, but nothing serious. Yeah, just mint, really. No problems with any timing this year, which is good. Mm. So there weren't any kind of strange laps. We're staying in Pinerolo, right next to the train station in the central town.
Right.
In like a real nice apartment block. Found an Airbnb, a gated apartment complex right in the centre. Yep. So it's nice.
Okay.
Overlooking the Alps. So
what did you do with the real occupants of that Airbnb? Are they still tied up in the boot of your hearse?
Yeah. We're bringing them back in there.
So you and your dad, a.k.a. Big Steve, for all the listeners, are secretly occupying somebody else's flat, cuckooing almost. Yeah. And somebody else's, the real occupants of that flat have been bundled up and tied up and are sitting in the back of your boot. So yeah, sounds good. So how far are you from the track? About 10 minutes drive, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, no more than 10 minutes. Yeah, no more than 10 minutes.
Yeah. Good.
So it's quite handy, really. It's the track for anyone that's that hasn't been here. And you also know this, Pete. It's in the middle of nowhere, really, isn't it? It's on like a farm, kind of thing, right in the back of a hotel, right in the middle of the countryside. It's a 10-minute journey out of Pinerolo, but it's a lovely setting. So you're surrounded by like cornfields and like little streams that kind of contain mount water from the nearby Alps. So it's a really nice scenic place to be as well. Really, really quiet, relaxing.
You'd like them to have been cornfields, though, wouldn't you? Knowing your penchant for healthy eating and nut mix.
Man-made protein.
What is it? Mushroom protein, isn't it?
Oh, it's mushroom protein, made in a lab.
I believe so. I said, see, learn, you know, facts and entertainment.
Yeah, it's not a party trick, is it? Knowledge.
Yeah, so facts and entertainment. Yeah. Factual. Entertainment. So how was your two-wheel drive? Oh, but before we get on to that, for anybody who doesn't know, the track is like a hard compacted clay concrete-y sort of dusty surface, isn't it? So it's not clay as in really particularly grippy clay, and it breaks up. And it's actually a 1/8 track, but they shortened it and reprofiled some of the jumps, because when I went 2 years ago, there was a particularly difficult double after the EFRA crossover, as it's called, which looked easier this year. It was it's still difficult, but it was really difficult the year before, especially the 2 years before in two-wheel drive. So they've worked on the track in some really good ways. And then they cut off that small straight with the hairpin into, as you say, the chicane over the line. I thought that worked really, really well. So it's an open air, hard compacted track, very difficult. Control tire was Proline what?
Proline Holeshot. What was it? M3. Holeshot M3s. That's for it. Rear two-wheel drive and rear on the four-wheel drive.
That's right. So that gives guys an idea, anybody listening, of what it's like. And so how did your two-wheel drive go? Tell us all about it, what cars you ran and how it went.
Two-wheel drive was pretty good. The track was quite loose, obviously, when we first started. They hadn't had any running on it at all for quite a while, or for a few weeks at least. Mm-hmm. So there was quite a lot of dust around. I started out with a four-gear stand-up. So I basically tried to go out there with... It doesn't really work like this, but I tried to go out there with a wet setup that we'd run back home. So like a setup we'd use for kind of wet AstroTurf, just like low grip.
Yeah.
You have to kind of stiffen the suspension and things for here because of the jumps, but also because the grip level is slightly different. When you race on clay, even though it's low bike, you have controllable slide. So if you go softer, it doesn't really give any more grip, and it actually makes the car handle worse. So you want to run slightly harder than you would have done in the wet, and probably slightly harder than we run back home in the dry, actually, just to kind of let the car kind of slide and slide around and move around, and because it's just got like a little bit of a different feel to it. So I started out with a four gear, had plenty of drive, plenty of steering, car felt good, didn't jump that great. I then through the seven practice rounds that we had on day one, I progressed to a three-gear stand-up after, I think, two runs, and I had two runs with a three-gear stand-up. That felt really good with the shocks in the front. And then I went to the layback for like practice round five, and this is obviously with a RC10B6. I went to a layback setup with the shocks in the front with a ball diff. By that time, the dust had kind of cleared, and the grip came up a lot. With the tyres that we ran, we actually had quite a lot of grip. There was, like I said, there was a controllable slide, but there was plenty of grip there. So, yeah, I ended up running a layback B6 with ball diff, shocks in the front, quite firm shocks, like quite thick oil and springs. And yeah, the car felt really good. That was awesome.
Yeah, you say that there's plenty of grip. It's funny that way, isn't it? Because sometimes there is, and other times it seems to vanish. And yeah, it changes, doesn't it, during the day and during the week, importantly.
Yeah, definitely. It changes, certainly from day to day. We should talk about it a bit later on in the four-wheel drive, but it definitely changes. It goes, when the track's hot, it gets grippier. When the sun goes down a little bit towards evening, it goes a little bit looser. But it's a strange thing. It's a strange surface to drive on. Unless you race on dirt, like this proper dirt, it's difficult to describe, really. Because the traction is there, and you can wheelie the car, like you say, you have got plenty of forward bite, but at the same time, depending on how you drive the car and how you push the car, then you will start to slide in corners that you don't really want to slide on. Generally, the more you slide, especially with two-wheel drive, the slower you go. You want to keep the car online. You want to keep it. You want to keep the traction, basically. Keep the car planted to the floor.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember when you try and almost attack everything, whilst it looks great and it's fun sort of sliding on opposite lock, you're actually just losing time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got to be really neat and tidy, which on that surface is very difficult. And that's one thing I wanted to cover, really, is that when you watch it, and you say you're watching Michael Olowski or David Ronafolk or any of those top guys, David Ungaro, it looks easy. It really isn't. They make it look easy. And I think certainly I remember from 2 years ago, whenever you speak to anybody who's done it and been out there, it really is quite an eye-opener, because we don't race on anything like that normally back here in the UK at all. So it's quite a learning curve to go and do it. And I applaud anybody who gives it a crack, because it isn't easy. And you look at the triple at the back, and you look at the jumps, and you think, oh, yeah, I could do that easily. And that's just not the case. I remember I mentioned to you a while ago, I tried in four-wheel drive to do the big jump into the Astro, like they do in four-wheel drive, and then hit the triple. And I tried it once, and it's so hard to get consistent drive up to jump into the Astro downside, if you like. You end up almost going in sideways. And you could see, even on some of the top guys, they'll go in like that and have to try and save it. Yeah. And maybe back out of doing the triple and go into a double and then a single.
Yeah,
it is really, really difficult. Yeah. And I can only say that when you watch the top heats and the A finalists in particular, who are doing it lap after lap, Michael Olowski was the one, obviously, that I noticed doing it lap after lap, and Ronafolk would do it. And I think in the third A final in four wheel drive, anyway, he backed out. I think it might have been the first one. Anyway, my memory's playing tricks. He would then go to jumping on top to drop in to do the triple.
I think in the four-wheel drive, that was Kobovic. He was leading by quite a way, and he then, all he wanted to do was win. He knew he couldn't win overall. He just wanted to win the leg to get second overall. And he then just started jumping on top and rolling into the triple, because, like we're saying, the jumps look small, but realistically, that first one, that kicker into the Astro, you're probably talking about 30 foot.
Yeah, it's 25, 30 feet.
And then the triple afterwards is probably another 20 foot on top of that.
Yeah, it's really, really huge. And
the cars on the triple, they're going probably, you're talking probably 6, 7, 8 feet in the air and traveling 20 feet at the same time. It's massive.
No, absolutely, you're right. So I just wanted to emphasize that, really. It is really, really difficult, the track. It's no joke. And you obviously started with a four gear, then you went to a layback, didn't you? You were saying,
By the end, Yeah.
Yeah. So where did you qualify overall in two wheel?
Qualified 49th, so made top 50. So that's ninth from the E.
Yeah.
Before I went, I wanted to make top 50, and I made 50 with the qualifying, so I was happy with that. Qualifying was difficult. It started out, we had a bit of controversy to start with, but nothing was really done about it. Despite a couple of protests, they weren't really interested, which was a shame. But at the start of round one, if you watch an RCTV, a bit of confusion. I think I was in heat three. We had a start order. Uri Hoodie was off first because he was the quickest in control practice. And then I was off second. He was car nine, I was car one. So we were told the start order. Well, first of all, we were told the wrong start order, a completely mixed up order that no one really knew. And then they came and corrected it and gave us a correct start order. Uri, me, car one, and then someone else. Mm. And then when we went on to the rostrum to start the qualifying, and this has happened for the two heats before mine and a couple of heats after mine as well, they hadn't turned the computer speakers off. So, and the computer was defaulted from 1 through to 10. So
the horn went
and then went one. And then Carlos, the guy standing over the cars on the line, one of the main EFRA guys, was standing there, and he corrected it within about a second. And then I by that time I'd gone because I heard car one. So I'd kind of gone, hesitated because I realized I wasn't supposed to go first. I thought, oh no, I'm going to get a penalty here because of jump start. And then kind of waited and hesitated. Then Uri went, and we kind of came like next side by side. Then I kind of hesitated again, moved out of the way, and he hesitated a bit. And he carried on going and jumped over the first double in towards the EFRA crossover. Then I went behind him. But by that time, I'd traveled so far, I didn't have enough run up to get over that first jump. Yeah. Couldn't clear it because I didn't get the traction to get over it. Hit the lip, and I lost 11 seconds on the first before I'd even started my round one. So qualifying started out difficult because then I had to kind of make up through the rest of the qualifying runs. Then the next four runs, I had to kind of make up places and try and get a bit closer to the front of the heat. But I was pleased to stay 49th, so stay in the top 50. Final went pretty good. It's just really on a track like this, Pete, as we've been saying, really, it's just not making mistakes, keeping out the carnage. And I managed to pull up to second. I could have won it. I think I was about 10th or 2/10 behind the winner. So we had a good racy final with lots of crashes. It was good fun.
Well, that's the thing, is that's not a great start for anybody at any meeting when you're trying to recover from a poor round one. But especially on that surface, because it's hard to make time up. Because you've got to be precise with the car. And so if other people are being precise, it's hard to gain any ground. So I think you did very, very well. How many competitors were there in two-wheel drive overall? Wasn't it 85?
No, 75 in two-wheel.
75 in two-wheel. Okay. And so that's pretty good, really. It's very difficult competing with... all the drivers from around Europe, especially those who are more used to that surface than we are in England. But that's no excuse. You did great. And it was really good to watch all the UK team doing what they were doing. Didn't Lee TQ, I believe, Lee Martin TQ two-wheel drive?
Yeah, Lee TQ'd. God, it seems like ages ago now. I can't think who
I know.
Was up there with him. I think like Jorn and Michael from Schumacher were up there. Jorn might have been a bit further back, actually. But through qualifying, Jorn had amazing pace. Jorn with his with the Schumacher laydown was going really, really well. Had Ungaro. Ungaro qualified second, actually, isn't he?
Yes. Well, so Davide Ungaro won two-wheel drive, which is a fantastic job. I thought Lee did an amazing job to TQ. I don't want to take anything away from anybody's achievements, but I felt a bit sorry for him in a way that he didn't win it as well, in a way, because he looked so good in practice. But
finals are
a lottery, as we know.
Through qualifying, Lee deserved it. He was the most consistent. He was the cleanest, the most consistent through the whole of the qualifying. He was the one crashing the least. He perhaps wasn't the quickest on a single lap, I don't think, but he drove the track how it needed to be driven, just with respect and kind of keeping it tidy. You obviously had in qualifying as well, you had Martin Beyer was really, really quick. He was quick in practice and quick in qualifying as well. Obviously, Neil made it in, Neil Craig, Una Hattonen, Ronnefalk was there or thereabouts. So there were some really quick guys in the qualifying. The finals, Lee was unlucky. the controversy surrounding the track was the metal bars they were putting on the AstroTurf at the back.
Yes.
The back section. So they were jumping on top of the tabletop where the AstroTurf kind of met the dirt. They had like a metal carpet strip, but it was probably around about 6 or 7 mil thick. So it's quite a thick bar. They had one at the start of the AstroTurf and one literally at the lip of the jump to the triple. It was causing all sorts of issues all the way through qualifying. But before we'd even started kind of round two or three of practice, we had some problems with it. And I asked them if they could just take it off, especially the second one, because it was, to start with, I couldn't jump the triple. I knew it was an easy triple to make, and I'd done it 2 years ago. Consistently 10 laps in a row, just can jump the triple. It's an easy jump, even though it's really quite big, it's an easy jump to make. But it was sending the cars in all sorts of funny ways, and it was lifting off in certain areas. Depending on where you hit it, you got a better line than others. Watching Lee Martin in practice, he was driving up, he kind of went onto the tabletop, into the Astro, went to do the triple, and his car just stopped at the lip of the triple. Like, he was probably going, 20 miles an hour? And from 20 miles an hour to dead stop, there's screws sticking outside out of this carpet. And after a bit of kind of chat to Paul Worsley, and Lee had a chat, and Neil, we had a look at it, and they kind of did things about it. They kind of put more screws in and took the broken screws out, so it was a bit better. And by the end of the week, they finally took it off after four-wheel drive practice, or just before the end of four-wheel drive practice, they finally took it off, and the jump was absolutely fine then. It worked bang on. But in the finals, you may have seen from RCTV, lap number one for Lee, leading round, no problem.
In two-wheel, wasn't it?
Order, two-wheel.
Yeah.
He just hit the jump in the wrong place, and his car just went nose high, skied it, and landed back down its rear wing, I think. And then it's final over. And that's no fault of Lee's. That was just that particular section. They're having problems with that strip. I don't know why they left it on there, to be honest. But
I saw exactly that happen to Lee, and I thought, I bet that's that strip.
Yeah,
which it
happened
was.
What happened to Ongaro? It was one in one of them in one of the finals. Mm. You've watched him, David Ongaro, and he was taking a tight line, which was the wrong line to take, but he was getting away with it. But on the occasional lap, he would hit it, and his car would just go nose high, or be thrown sideways. It was just really sketchy how they had that there.
So they're absolutely right. So two wheel drive, you qualified 49th, you say, and 49th. Where did you finish?
42nd overall, second in the
E. That's nice. That's a good climb up then.
Yeah, so made the seven spots. It's exciting.
That's good. So well done on that. And
thank you.
And how was four-wheel drive?
Four-wheel drive, started out with great pace. The grip was still there from the two-wheel drive. Single lap pace, I wasn't that far off some of the really quite quick guys, actually. I think my combined lap time for seeded practice was 58.3 seconds, which is just over 29 seconds a lap, two in a row.
The top
guys are doing 27.5s or something. So I was actually quite quick. When it came to qualifying, we had that thunderstorm the night before. We had a lot of rain where we're staying in Pinerolo. I think we had a little bit of the track as well, but a little bit of rain puts a little bit of dust back on the track and drops the grip down, as you can probably remember from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it made it a little bit more difficult. And I found I was just chasing the car then. I was driving okay. The car felt good, but it was just trying to push on the track when there's less grip. And I struggled a little bit with the traction, I think. Just struggled to get going. And I was starting to miss time jumps, especially the double after the Effra crossover, that little tricky double we spoke about. That became difficult.
Yes.
There was a big rut developed after on the landing.
Yeah, I saw that rut. Yeah, I mean, I saw one car jump into it and literally stop.
Yeah, it was about an inch and a half deep, that rut. So
yeah.
It was certainly deeper than the actual suspension of the car would allow, kind of thing. So that became tricky. And then when you're not quite so confident with that particular jump, then you start taking different lines over it. And I struggled with a couple of the jumps through qualifying. I was unlucky. I was on a good run in the last qualifier, round number five. And then a guy behind me was particularly racy, even though it was a qualifier. And we're going over the triple section. I jumped onto the tabletop, rolled into the triple to do the triple, and he just launched it from the kicker, landed on top of my car, and ripped my front shock off with it 2 laps to go. So sadly, because I couldn't finish that run, which would have been one of my best runs, I was bumped out of the E and I was FQ, which is a shame. But
yes.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Can't do anything about it.
Hard luck, mate. Hard luck. Definitely. You know, I still think you did great. And you're at FQ. You were. I was watching the F final. You had a particularly good F final. I think there were some classic examples of Hayward butchery in there on young. If I'm saying this correctly, it would be Emily Halluin.
I know
Emily Tessier because I saw her last year in Reims. You two were going around. Great guns, and I think you had some pace, I would say, though, and I think you were quicker, but she held a line really well, but it didn't stop the butchery throughout. Accidental. And you did wait
every time. It's just it's difficult on those conditions because it's difficult when you're racing so close and the traction's not 100% there, and then you've got these tricky jumps, you've got to time correctly. People take different lines to different jumps and run different corners. And Emily drove, she was driving like really good tight lines, defensive. And in some of the corners, she was almost driving super safe and really slowing down in some of the corners. And by the time she slows down and you turn your brakes down on the car because of the low grip conditions, you try and kind of stay behind her, but in the end you start tap the back end, and there's not a lot you can do. If you watch all the finals on RCTV from the first final right up to the top guys, there is a lot of contact between the cars. It's something you can't really help. Like on Astro or carpet, if you're behind someone, you've got brakes, you can put the brakes on, you can stop the car. But with on the dirt, it's very difficult to do, and
not so
easy. A couple
of
missed time jumps, and it's tricky. So I think she finished ahead of me. I think she was second and I was third in that final in the end. But it was we had a good race.
It was exciting, actually. Another race that I thought was very exciting is, did you see Jamie Hall's race?
I didn't, sadly.
He led virtually the whole thing and came second. I wasn't sure, but I thought there was an instant after the difficult double, after the Effra crossover, where Jamie lost the lead, and I'll need to speak to him about that, and Graham and Julie and Tommy, and find out what happened, because at first I looked at it and I thought I wasn't happy about it because I thought he got rear-ended, but I could be wrong because you couldn't quite see what happened. But Jamie's was fantastic. He drove a really brilliant final. I was gutted he didn't win it because he virtually led it from start to finish. The other guy was really racy. Obviously I'd want Jamie to do well, as I would anybody on the British team, really. So you did well in both, I felt, and the British team as a whole, I thought was did really, really well. And I wanted to actually touch on something now that I wasn't happy with, which was the fact that, and it's not just due to my affiliations to my sponsor, that being Schumacher Racing, but I didn't agree at all with the penalty that was given to Michael Olowski. Now, you didn't see it in real time.
No, I have my back to it because I was marshalling in front of the jump, basically, just behind the crossover. I was marshalling just there. So I heard it and I saw David Ronfalk's car break. But I couldn't see. I was obviously watching my corner rather than the race, so I never actually saw the incident.
Well, what I would say is, I think anybody who wants to know what happened or didn't see it, whatever it may be, you can see it on RC Racing TV, and it's in the second leg of the four-wheel drive A finals, right towards the end. And I won't describe it because it'll be boring describing it. You can see it on RC Racing TV on YouTube. But for me, I don't know a single racer who isn't, like, you know what I mean, like an inverted commas fun racer. Anybody who's a hard racer, like our friends in the Midwest and whatever, who wants to win, who would back out of that jump and wouldn't have done what Michael Olowski did. And they hit in the air. And obviously, I've no beef with David Ronafolk. I think he's a great guy. I'm thrilled he won retained four-wheel drive. He won it out in Reims when we were there. He's a top guy. There's nothing to do with him. This is all about the decision. Now, Michael will no doubt feel peeved about the penalty. And David Runnefolk would be understandably upset that his car got hit in the air and broke. But putting that to one side for the moment, I just don't know anyone who'd pull out of a jump like that. I just don't. Not a racer who thinks, I want to win, and we're both going in. If it was me and you going into that jump, I'd go for it. There's no way I'm pulling out. And if your Jumanji car ended up halfway up the concrete banner with its sort of rear wishbone hanging off, so be it. Yeah, but I'd expect nothing less, though. If it did the same to me, and my L1 was landed badly and broke, I'd take that on the chin. That's racing, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it.
The refereeing was a little bit controversial week, really.
Here's something else that we ought to talk about, because one thing I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago that top man Chris Delves came and had a word with me about really enjoying our podcast because we're honest. When we had the chat about the tires, I was honest, and I think that's what people like, is not just repeating platitudes but saying what you think and what you feel and trying to be honest about things. Yeah. I've seen on several sources so far, both online and offline, that the refereeing was questionable all week. This is the Euros. I know it's difficult to get volunteers. I know it. So I don't want to be too harsh. However, this is the Euros, and it sounds highly dubious, the standard of what was going on. Now, that would have obviously resulted in a penalty being applied to Michael Orlowski. I wouldn't have applied that penalty. I believe there are other referees who certainly wouldn't have done either. I'm not mentioning any names because I don't know who was spoken to. I'm suspecting I know who was spoken to, but I could be wrong. You were there. You were there. What's the score?
The decisions were a bit strange, actually. And the whole... take, for example, my round one in two-wheel drive. Not that I'm bitter about it or anything. But I jump started, didn't I? Like, I jump started before your eye. I went off first. So give me a penalty or tell me to stop. Or because the computer called my number, and they know it called my number, although there was some denial from some people I spoke to that it actually happened, even though I heard it for other people as well. It happened to Natalie Williams in the heat before me. She was car one, same problem. Happened to Joe Howson. But luckily, he was going off first. But I heard car one on the computer before they corrected it for him. But give me a penalty. I jump started, but they didn't do anything about it. And they could have quite easily just stopped the race, brought everyone back, and started again. But they didn't. There was incidents of not calling faster drivers through. It's difficult when you're racing up there on that big track. It's difficult to know.
Did you just say there was incidents of not calling fatter drivers through? I think you mean faster.
Faster.
Fatter drivers being called through. You know,
it's got nothing to do with body weight, Pete. Nothing to do with body weight. Otherwise, you need to propose that.
there's people in front of me. My word. I think you need to propose that at the next AGM. Fatter drivers are called through.
Fatter as in fatter.
Yeah, that's it. Gold chains, fatter.
You don't hear that word anymore, do you? Fat.
No, fat. No, not really. Fatter as in BMI. That's always a bad judge of someone's corpulence or whatever it might be, as to how overweight they are. But no disrespect to overweight drivers. Back on track. Calling the faster drivers through, you were saying.
Yeah, there was none of that, especially in the second half of the week with the second referee that we had. Penalty distribution was a bit, just not really consistent. For example, again, not that I'm bitter, but in the four-wheel drive, when that car jumped and landed on top of my car and ripped my front shock off, ending my run and ending my chances of staying where I wanted to stay in the E final, all I had to do was finish the run and I would have been in the E. But it kind of dropped me out of the final I wanted to be in. Frustrating the fact that the car broke, no damage as such. But when a car lands on you from that height to that kind of speed, nothing could be done. But nothing was done. They just drove off. That was it.
They obviously didn't get a penalty.
they didn't get a penalty, and the Orlowski incident, for example, gets a penalty, and it's just racy.
Exactly. But, now that's exactly what I was just about to say. What's the difference?
Yeah. Yeah.
You had your line.
Yeah.
You had your line, and that car landed on you, broke your shock tower, and that ended your race 2 laps before the end.
Yeah.
They drove off, no penalty. Michael Orlowski hits David Ronafalk in the air.
Can't control the car.
You can't do anything about that. That point there. They've both gone for it on the last lap. Ronafalk had track position. Orlowski's come up the very inside, I think, and hit him in the air, and then crossed the line first. And Ronafalk got in between the hosing at the apex and broke his car. Penalty.
Yeah. Two very similar situations.
It's similar,
but different in the way that the contact was made. Like the contact for me was made on the floor as I landed in. I was about to ramp up for the triple, and that car behind me decided to launch from the kicker into the Astra. And that's when they landed on top of my car, because he was obviously just trying to gun it as fast as he could.
Yes.
Whereas the other one, they were racing against each other in a final. And like you say, it happened in midair. What can you do? I mean, there are certain referees that would have seen the situation completely different. And from my opinion, although I haven't seen it yet, because I got hammer back to it, I was marshalling that final. It's just one of those things, isn't it? It's not like you can do. Like you say, fair enough, Ronafalk would have been annoyed. The fact that he was taken out, in his eyes, he was taken out and didn't finish second. But then Orlowski is going to be annoyed because he thought it was just one of those things, stuck in the air, what can you do, racing against each other, and he's given a penalty for it. So, yeah, it's tough, really.
I think people mostly get upset, and it's the same as people who watch football, of which I am one, is the inconsistency in refereeing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, John Cockhill is our national referee, and he's refereed the Euros. And I don't always agree with John's decisions, and some of them I outright disagree with. But I respect his position, and it's his call to make. I do get agitated about them, as we all do sometimes. But generally, he's really, really, really good. And he does what he does, and he does it tirelessly all over for very little thanks, apart from enjoying it and being part of the scene, and it's what he does. But it's consistency that people want, and I just don't understand, personally myself, I don't understand anybody who could race who could have given Orlowski a penalty. I just don't get it at all. And I'll cast my mind back thinking about it now to something else. In two-wheel drive, I'm sure I saw Neil Cragg put in an amazing run, and he got held up by a white car in his heat.
Yeah.
Okay. And the white car must have seen Neil coming for about half a lap minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was coming and coming. You could see that he's going to catch me soon. And the white car still didn't give way. Now, on that surface, as you well know, in two-wheel drive especially, when someone starts interrupting your flow, you can start to miss jumps because you can't get the traction, you don't get the clearance. That was especially difficult back in 2017 over the double after the crossover. If somebody was in your way, and that actually happened to you in four-wheel drive, I think, you were too close to Emily, I think, and you cased the second part of the jump. Because if somebody's in the way, you don't always get the traction. So you're either going to go through them or you've got to pull out.
And that's it.
That's not easy in a final. And also that jump, if you pull out, it can make the front end sort of nosedive a bit. It's a bit odd. But this white car got in the way of Neil Cragg.
Yeah.
And Neil Cragg nearly cased, I think, the triple on the last lap because it was in the way. And I think Davide Ongaro got TQ that run by literally hundredths, I think it was.
Was it round one?
No, I thought it was two.
Oh, it might have been two then, yeah.
I could be wrong. And I remember thinking, if I was on that rostrum, I'd be telling that white car, get out of the way.
Yeah, way in advance.
Way in advance.
Does,
white car.
Yeah.
White car, leaders coming. Yeah. Now, I have refereed from time to time. I don't get much time to do it because I'm looking after Abe, especially
Abe,
at nationals.
10-second penalty, Abe, stop and go, Abe.
That's just help myself.
That's it. You've lost your best round score. Disqualified from the meeting.
I have done it at regionals and occasionally when I do have the time. But I just think people just want consistency and clearness. So when I have done it, I'll just be very clear and call the leaders. And I've done it indoors, and it's really difficult indoors, as you know, because it's all so fast what's going on. But you do your best and you make it clear to people where what's going on. You almost have to call the race a bit.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what people are looking for. And I'm not sure that they got it this week. I was fuming about that white car getting in Neil Craig's way because I thought, you know, come on, you can see he's coming. And, you know, as Neil Craig famously says, that's racing. But I think it was a shame because if the referee had done their job, I don't know whether anything was said. I don't know. But that white car should have been told in no uncertain terms to get out of the way. That was my feeling on it, most definitely. So, yeah. I mean, that kind of wraps things up, really, on the race meeting. So you're still in Pinerolo, aren't you?
I am. I'm looking out the window at the thunder and lightning that's happening right now. It's
very, very frightening. Galileo. Go on, sorry.
So we brought everything, obviously, the people back home, they probably know, we brought everything forward by a day. So we did. It was two hard days. We had eight practice runs on Thursday, four-wheel drive. So six free practice and two control practice. And then on Friday, we had a free practice, five qualifiers, and then finals. So there were, and in that heat and everything, there were two really, really long days. But obviously because we had this weather predicted. So it started raining about 12:30 and hasn't stopped since. It's now 3:00. So they made the right decision to bring it all forward, which is good. So we've got everything done.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, you're all packed up already. So like actually a day of rest after two very hard days, I think.
Yeah, I'm quite glad actually we did it all in one go. It's nice to have just a day off to relax and not do a lot. Obviously, driving back tomorrow, Sunday morning, going to stop off in Reims on the way. So spend a night in Reims and then drive the last
just
bit.
revisit that pain. Is that it?
Broken dreams in Reims.
You know. Well, this show is entitled 50% Loco in Pinerolo.
50% Loco.
Because obviously you're there and I'm not. Stopping off in Reims. So when do you think you'll get back to these glorious shores, these Boris Johnson ruled shores? Can't wait.
I tell you what, you know, this is going to be a controversial statement to make, but leaving Europe is probably one of the worst things our country's ever done. On the basis that, right, as soon as you cross the channel, like it's a different world. It's mad, like, you know, when you're driving down, as you know from last year, driving down to Reims, the roads are fantastic, the people are friendly, no traffic. Driving down to Folkestone is one of the most stressful things you'll ever do. As soon as you've been in Calais, I drove the rest of the journey all the way down to Pinerolo, stopping off in Switzerland on the way, and it's just bizarre how easy it is and how nice. And
I must say, having driven to Reims myself last year, honestly, you see at Calais, I think it was, you see like, you know, 300 kilometres to Reims or whatever it is. I didn't stop once.
Yeah.
There was no traffic at all.
Yeah, I didn't see any, there's no traffic jams, no temporary lights, no roadworks, nothing for 800 and something kilometres from Calais to here. And it's just a breeze. It's just a doddle. All the road surfaces are perfect. And like I said, when you stop off at cafes and roadside stops and just lovely friendly people, and it's just a different world. But I can't wait to get back to the M25 and try and get through the Dartford Tunnel again. That'd be good fun. Looking forward to that.
Well, they all messaged me, all these people, saying how much they hated you. So I don't think that you don't worry too much about your European friends, because they've all said, can't wait to be rid of him, basically. Yeah, him and his hearse and Big Steve. Get out of this country. They're going to start throwing things at you, throwing pasta at you, shoes. They'll start throwing sandals at you and onions as you drive through, cloves of garlic as you drive through France.
Yeah.
No, not that we deal in stereotypes whatsoever. And yeah, so when you're getting back to the UK, Monday morning?
So, yeah, Monday afternoon, lunchtime-ish, and then I'll drive up from Folkestone. So I'll be back
home. The skies will darken as these glorious shores recognise that the butcher is back in town. Poor old Emily Hallowin, she's experienced Alexander Haywood butchery up close. I laughed twice.
Oh, I know.
Within the space of about a quarter, and you got a stop go. I laughed so much on the chat. I messaged Andy, Stu Harlow, and said, "Stop go for the butcher." I couldn't believe it. Just couldn't resist.
That was unbelievable.
Was it Mark Hall said, "You couldn't resist taking it abroad, could you? Your butchery."
Unbelievable. That was another controversial one. What's his name? Yeah, it was Uri Hoodie. He was ahead of me. I went and apologised afterwards. I went in the pits and said sorry and whatever, and he was all right about it. But he was coming onto the straight. I was behind him. This is qualifying round two, I think it was. And he started to spin out and came back across me as I had the inside line. I'd caught him on the split by a second and a half anyway. Mm. And he started to spin out, kind of corrected himself, but came back across me. Wheels came together side by side. He rolled and I didn't, and I got a stop go. And Natalie Williams was marshalling on that point, on point one at the start of the straight, right where the incident happened. She didn't know it was me, actually. She didn't know it was my car, but I heard her talking to Greg. I was pitting next to her and Greg, great family, her, Greg and Barry. And she was telling Greg about the incident that she saw, which happened to be me. And she says, I just saw this, one car got a penalty in the heat I was marshalling. It was, wow. She said, the guy's been out in front of him and the car behind, nothing they could do, side by side, and he got a penalty for it. And I was like, oh, that was me, Natalie. And I was like, oh, thank God for that. It wasn't just me who thought it was a bit harsh. I didn't
mean
to say anything.
It certainly sounds harsh to me.
I apologised to Uri, and he was fine about it. But again, nothing I could do. And it's on RCTV for everyone to see.
It certainly sounds harsh to me. I can just imagine Natalie saying that. So hello to Natalie, Barry and Greg.
That's the inconsistencies, I think. And nothing was said about it. And nothing was said from the referees until, and I'm debating whether they actually saw it, because we came round and then it happened. And I went halfway down the straight and Uri Hoodie then said, thank you, like being sarcastic, because I got taken out. And then it said, car one, stop, go, penalty. And I was thinking, well, I think it's just the reaction that they heard brought on the fact that they had a penalty, because I'm unsure whether they actually saw it or not. But
that's weird. Who was the referee?
It was a guy, I'm not sure. He was called in faster cars through, actually. He was all right in that respect. But yeah, again, the general decisions were a bit flaky. Again, no consistency with it. I saw much harsher incidents through two-wheel drive than that.
And nothing happened.
Nothing got caught. Yeah. So, but what can you do? One of those things.
No, exactly. Well, look, we shall leave you to enjoy the remainder of your time in the lovely town of Pinerolo in Italy, beautiful Italy. And thank everybody for listening, correct?
Absolutely.
And we've been waiting to do another episode for you. We felt that this was the perfect one, really, was to find out how Alexander had done with his little cane thrown over his shoulder and a little spotted handkerchief done up at the back, carrying his sandwiches made by Trudy, his mum, and sort of off on tour with Big Steve down to Pinerolo. We felt that was a good one. So, I mean, it's all go when you get back, mate. You're straight into, we have the BRCA National at Boughton.
Yep.
And then we have the final tool drive regional of the year at Telford, the amazing Telford track. We then have final four-wheel drive regional of the year for us in Midwest at Oswestry. And then we have, that's right, then we have the final national of the year at Stotfold.
We do.
So, yeah.
You'll be there practicing the week before.
We did the week before, the day before,
the morning of.
I always enjoy the same old lame joke I tell every year to people who are unsuspecting when I say, when they say, oh, like, oh, this is a really good national layout. And I say, yeah. Well, when I was here all day Thursday practicing it, and normally it's like their eyes fall out on stalk. You know, and sort of like people start looking around looking for someone to complain to. I have to say, it worked on Brian Preddy. It also worked on you when I didn't know you so well. But there's none of that shenanigans at Stockfold. We always lay something new. Alex Carter does the layouts. It's something new, something fresh to give everybody a fair chance. We close for a full week and a half before the event. Yeah. So there is no racing on the track whatsoever. It's good. I mean, I think next time when we do the podcast, we can probably talk about some nationals and probably catch up about the vets and juniors, which we haven't talked about, which was a few weeks ago. And maybe we should see about getting Abe on the show. Maybe that would be good.
Yeah.
I think if he can work out to use a telephone. Thanks everybody for listening. Have a safe journey home, Alexander. Well done.
Thank you.
A massive well done to all of the British team out there, from myself and Abe, and obviously yourself, but you're there, if you see what I mean. A massive well done to you all. We're all proud of you all for what you've achieved. Congratulations to Davide Ongaro for two-wheel drive, David Ronafolk for four-wheel drive. Obviously, people, Lee, Neil, my teammates, John and Michael, with a fantastic showing both days. There's people in my mind that I could name, but I'm not going to because I don't want to forget anyone. But we're watching you all week, Freddie Russell and co. Like I say, I'm not going to name anymore, but we're watching you. Well done to everybody, and the winners and the podium finishers all did brilliantly. And we'll catch up with you soon. And I look forward to speaking to you when you're back. So,
yeah, great stuff.
Yes, thanks. Thanks for joining me, Alexander.
No worries. Cheers, Pete. Thanks for having me.
And you're welcome. We'll see you soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, Pete.